Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
When 19-year-old Brittany Wood disappeared on May 30th, 2012 from Mobile, Alabama, it looked at first like so many stories we've heard before. A young woman vanished and her family launched a desperate search, but there was no trace of her. But almost immediately, it became clear that this case was different. Because Brittany's disappearance wasn't the only police investigation into her family. In fact, months before Brittany vanished, detectives had already begun to uncover something far more disturbing than anyone could have imagined. As her family's secrets began to come to the surface, detectives had to ask, did Brittany Wood pay the price for what her family didn't want anyone to know? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Brittany Wood. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. So this is part two of our Brittany Wood story.
Yeah, deep breath.
I know. It's been rough. If you haven't listened to part one, it's the episode right below this one in your podcast app. So make sure you go listen to that first or else you will have no idea what's going on or who any of these people are. And again, I do want to say that while we won't get into details of child sexual abuse, this story does heavily involve that topic. And we do have to talk about it. Somewhat in order to talk about Brittany's disappearance, because unfortunately those two things are intertwined. So again, just a warning up top. Last week, we started the story of Brittany Wood, a 19-year-old mother who vanished after meeting up with her uncle, Donnie Holland. As the investigation into her disappearance went on, the public learned that several members of her family were already under investigation for an incestuous child sex abuse ring, and Donnie Holland was said to be the ringleader. Within a month or two of Brittany's disappearance, the arrests started. 10 people, all members of her family or their close friends, were arrested on various sex abuse charges. But that wasn't the end of it. A year later, one final arrest would come. And that arrest would change the perception of everything people thought they knew about the sex abuse case and Brittany Wood's disappearance. On June 27, 2013, Brittany Wood's mother, Chessie Wood, was arrested and charged with two counts of sodomy and sex abuse of a child under 12.
I knew it.
You did. You said it in the last episode.
Oh, fuck.
According to a press release from the Mobile County Sheriff's Department, the victim, who was another family member, revealed the abuse and details during therapy at the Child Advocacy Center. The victim was 14 when she made this accusation, but the alleged abuse was said to have happened several years prior. The docuseries that I mentioned in the last episode, Monster in the Shadows, showed part of Chessie's interrogation video in which Detective Winberg tells her that the victim told authorities that Chessie and Donnie had been having sex when they called her back into the bedroom and forced her to join.
Chessie was having sex with Donnie.
Yeah.
Isn't that her brother?
Brother-in-law.
That's her brother-in-law.
And it's her sister's husband. Chessie vehemently denied the allegations. She told producers that, and police, that she never had sex with Donnie, nor has she touched any of her family members. And according to her defense team, she passed a polygraph to this effect. And I will say that they interviewed the polygrapher in the docuseries, and he confirmed that. Detective Winberg was also interviewed for the documentary, though by that time, he was no longer an investigator with Baldwin County. And I want to talk about that for a moment before we move on, because in a story that is full of unreliable narrators, I might include Winberg in that.
Okay.
He was young when he was assigned to these cases and had apparently just become a detective. He started with Baldwin County as a deputy in 2006, which, if I'm doing my LinkedIn math correctly, would have been shortly after he graduated college. I don't know exactly when he became detective, but he only had 6 years of experience total when he began investigating the sex abuse case in 2012. And that's not a lot.
No,
it's not. And I think that he had maybe a year of being a detective. Maybe.
This is a huge case.
Yeah. For somebody with basically no experience.
Damn.
Chessie was arrested in 2013, and that's the same year he left the sheriff's department and became a private investigator.
Why did he leave the sheriff's department?
I don't know. I mean, he was obviously too young to retire.
Right.
But unsurprisingly, I couldn't find any record of what actually happened in terms of his employment. So I think all of that's really important to keep in mind as we're talking about this. But back to Chessie. In the documentary, Winberg said while he was interrogating her, she kind of admitted to like having sex with Donnie, but left out the part where like the child was there, you know? But she does nothing like that in the clips that the documentary shows. In those, she strongly denies ever having a sexual relationship with her brother-in-law at all, of any sort. And she says she never would have touched any children, especially not her family members. With that said, we're only shown clips of the beginning of the interrogation, not the whole thing. So the part that they show is when they're basically telling her why she's there.
Right.
Right? And she's like, what are you talking about? That never happened. Absolutely not. So there very well could be another clip in which Chessie does exactly what Winberg said she did. Now, that, of course, would be horribly misleading on the part of the documentarians. Very unethical.
If they didn't include it.
Exactly.
Right.
But I will say that most of the three episodes of this docuseries are built on interviews with Chessie. So without her cooperation, they would have basically had nothing. On the other hand, I don't trust cops. And there's a good chance that this one got fired or forced out shortly after this. So I really don't know who to believe.
Yeah, I don't know.
But according to Chessie, that never happened, which means she's saying that this girl lied about her. While we do know that the accuser is one of Donnie and Wendy's children, we don't know which one it is. So we don't know if it's the one who made the initial accusations and contacted Brittany. You know, we don't know, right? We don't know if it's the one who made the allegations against Scott or if it's her sister. But in terms of the initial arrests, the 10 arrests that I talked about in the last episode, we'll get to, you know, how all those cases ended up later. But there was proof beyond victim statements.
Okay.
There were videos.
Oh, Christ, this just gets worse and worse.
Dustin Kent, Mendy's husband, and William Brownlee, a family friend, told prosecutors that they watched videos on Donnie and Wendy's home computer of several minors being abused. This led to a search warrant being executed at Wendy's home in November 2013. The warrant also said, quote, Donald Holland showed them videos on his computer of the victim and Brittany Wood at various ages, all under 13, engaging in sexual activity with different adults. End quote. So Brittany had been a victim of Donnie's for years. And this abuse would have been happening around the same time her step-grandfather was abusing her. But we're supposed to believe that she told the family about him and not about Donnie and Wendy.
Or anybody else, right?
Chessie also said in the documentary that Donnie and Wendy lived with her mother and Ronald Robertson, the step-grandfather. And she believed that Ronald is basically the one who started the entire sex abuse ring. But again, Brittany apparently told the family that Ronald was abusing her. They went to the cops. He got sentenced to 25 to life, but Chessie thought Donnie was a stand-up guy.
Right.
Up until a month after Brittany disappeared. Like, none of it makes sense.
I think she knew about it. I think she was involved. You know, I mean, that's the reason for the inconsistent stories. She was a participating member. And they had probably all been abused sexually by that step-grandfather.
But yeah, I mean, because police have said this was multi-generational. And I mean, that's three generations right there. So if you go with the step-grandfather, then you have Chessie's generation.
Right.
And then you have two of the children who were accused.
Right.
What does make sense is that Assistant District Attorney Teresa Hines later said, quote, "Brittany could have been huge. She could have corroborated so many things," end quote. So on May 30th, Brittany goes to see Donnie, potentially to confront him about the investigation, and then she vanishes. 2 days later, Donnie shoots himself, and within weeks, nearly the entire family is arrested. But what I'm curious was, what exactly was Brittany going to confront Donnie about? She obviously knew about the abuse. She had been a victim herself for years. And I can't even say that she would think she was the only one, because it said that there were videos of her and her cousin.
Right.
Though it didn't necessarily say that they were together in the videos. They could have been separate videos.
Right. But wasn't there Facebook messages between her and, one of the cousins?
There were. So, yeah. So, I mean,
she knew.
Yeah, she knew when she went to confront Donnie on the 30th.
Right.
So, I mean, you could say that maybe she thought she was the only victim. But, like, I don't know that I necessarily buy that based on everything. I mean, I can't believe, like, I have trouble believing that she thought they weren't doing this to other kids.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know what would be the point of her going over there.
That's what I mean. Like, what was she... Well, yeah, what was she confronting him about?
I don't know. Like, why go over there and say, I'm going to tell the cops everything?
Yeah.
Just go to the cops. Just tell them.
Yeah. I mentioned in the last episode that within a few months of her daughter's disappearance, Chessie began to state publicly that she believed Donnie had harmed her daughter. So not only did she say that she believed that her daughter was a victim of Donnie's, which she was, she started to believe that he killed her. In an October 2013 interview with AL.com, she stated it plainly, saying, quote, "I believe my daughter went to confront him about other victims and it backfired on her. She was a fireball and she found out some information that she couldn't handle. I believe Donnie killed my daughter over the sex crimes," end quote.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% think that's what happened.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously that's what makes sense. But my question is, if Donnie did something to Brittany the night she came to see him, did he act alone?
Mm.
Because I think we need to talk about the Wendy of it all. When I said earlier that Donnie was believed to be the ringleader, that wasn't exactly true. Donnie and Wendy were believed to have run the abuse ring as partners. In fact, many of the acts of abuse were perpetrated by Donnie and Wendy together. Derek Wood, Brittany's brother, was interviewed for Monster in the Shadows. He told producers that both Donnie and Wendy began to sexually abuse him around the age of 6 or 7 years old, and that the abuse continued through his early teenage years. Quote, "It would be some friends of theirs. Older women would come over, they would get involved, and Donnie would take pictures and coerce me into what I was doing. But as far as family members, it was just Donnie and Wendy," end quote. He later testified that he had been raped by his Aunt Wendy when he was just 14 years old. When all the arrests came down, Wendy was charged with the most serious crimes out of everyone, though had Donnie survived, he surely would have been similarly charged. So if the idea is that Donnie killed Brittany to stop her from talking to the police, didn't Wendy have just as much of a motive?
For sure, yeah.
And that's what Chessie seemed to believe. In the same interview with AL.com, in which she said she believed Donnie killed her daughter, she also said that she believes her sister, Wendy, knows exactly what happened to Brittany, saying, quote, "I begged you, Wendy, to tell me where my daughter is, and you won't. Please tell me where my daughter is," end quote. Chronological age is your birthday. Biological age is how old your body really is, and it's the strongest indicator of disease risk and mortality. The True Age and True Health Combo Kit measures biological age versus chronological age and your current pace of aging. I've been using True Diagnostic for a while, and it's been so interesting to me to get the data that normal blood work just doesn't cover. My true age is pretty close to my chronological age, but there's always room for improvement. TrueAge tracks the health of 11 organ systems, including your heart, brain, and lungs. True Health checks over 105 vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and other health markers. But best of all, if you get the combo kit, it gives you 3 aging actions and 3 health actions to work on each quarter. So it gives you goals that you can actually achieve to improve your health. You order online, the kit ships right to your door. It's a quick, simple finger prick at home, and then you just drop it in the prepaid return package. You just follow the recommendations for the 90 days and then you retest to see your progress. It uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million biomarkers. It's trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. And right now, my listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code ATTWG20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code ATTWG20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or a subscription. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. Then they show up to your door in as little as 2 days. And let me tell you, I'm on the other side of the country and they still got here super quick. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out. I'm an elder millennial, and so jeans are kind of like the thing that I can't figure out right now. And so in my new bag that I just got, I ordered 2 different pairs of jeans because I'm still trying to figure out what actually works for me. And I love it because I can rent high quality designer clothes without having to make that financial investment. Plus, there's no laundry required and no time wasted shopping. So right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 60% off of their first month. That's up to $150 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, ARMOIRE. .style/ATTWG to get up to 60% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. If you've been listening to this show for a while, then you know that I'm a podcaster and a realtor. And on some days, like today, I have to do both. I spent all day in a courthouse watching a trial that we're covering, and then I had to drive an hour and a half away to put a lockbox on a new listing. It was a long day, to say the least, and normally I would have been exhausted at about 3 when I still had several hours to go. But I've recently been adding everyday dose into my morning routine, specifically into my morning coffee, and let me tell you, I was driving home late tonight and I felt great. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high-quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane and chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now for Black Friday, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/ATTWG or use code ATTWG at checkout. The very next month, Box 10 obtained letters that pointed toward Wendy. A letter that was allegedly written to Wendy said, quote, "Brittany wrote a letter with a lot of evidence on it pertaining to Jennifer, her, you, Mendy, and the child victim. She said if anything happened to her, to give it to the police." end quote. The letter goes on to say, quote, no name, so meaning the person who was in possession of that letter, is scared to give the letter up, end quote. And, quote, you need to get that letter that Brittany wrote. This can seriously expletive you up, end quote.
So who wrote the letter?
Well, they didn't say. That wasn't made public. So somebody wrote the letter saying that somebody else was in possession of a letter written by Brittany implicating Wendy, Jennifer Moore, Mendy, and talking about Brittany and the other child victim. Mm-hmm. Two other letters obtained by Fox 10 were believed to be written by Wendy Holland for family friends. In one, it says, quote, even if they do turn it in, they won't know if Britt wrote it or not. They cannot compare handwriting, end quote.
Because Brittany never wrote anything? Like,
I mean, maybe nothing they had, or maybe they're saying, you know, she's dead. I don't know. But yeah. Now, these letters are part of what convinced authorities to take a second look into Donnie's death. They had to ask if it was actually a suicide or if maybe Wendy had killed her husband to protect herself. At that point, though, all investigators could really do was look back at the autopsy and the ballistics report. Donnie's body wasn't available for reexamination.
Cremated?
3 days after his death. Another interesting tidbit is that Brittany's gun was allegedly not the only item of hers that was found in Donnie's Suburban. Many news articles over the years have stated that police found Brittany's cell phone battery in there as well. But according to Chessy in the docuseries, after Fairhope police processed the Suburban and returned it to Wendy, Wendy showed up at Chessy's door. This was about 2 weeks later. In her hand was allegedly Brittany's phone battery. She told Chessy that she had found it after police returned the car to her. Chessy says that she called the Fairhope police and was told that they were aware of the battery but didn't think it was significant because it was just the battery and no data could be gotten from it.
But that puts Brittany in the car.
Yeah. And her, it shows that her battery was separated from her phone. Like, right. Meaning they were trying to hide her fucking phone.
Yeah.
Because her phone's never been recovered.
What the fuck?
Oh, and one other tidbit from the car comes from the incident report. And I've never seen this reported in any news articles. It wasn't mentioned in the documentary. So, I only got this from the incident reports. The only place I've seen it, it says that they recovered two cell phones from the SUV, a black and gray AT&T cell phone and an LG phone with a green case. Now, we know neither one is Brittany's. We can assume that at least one is Donnie's because Wendy deleted texts off of his phone when he was dying in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't found any information about the second phone. Was it Donnie's? Was it Wendy's? Or was it a third party's? It's just like another one of the million questions that I have about this case.
It seems like this, there was a lot missed.
Yeah.
In this.
Right. Which is so strange to me because, again, this is season 7 of this show.
Mm-hmm.
We covered cases in which a lot of things were missed. But it's strange to me in this case because day one, investigators knew something was very wrong with this family. And so to me, that would be an indication like, hey, we really need to look at everything very carefully in this.
Right.
You know, and when a main suspect in another case comes up dead 2 days after his niece, who's a victim in that other case, goes missing, you gotta really be thorough into his death investigation, one would think, and into investigating everything around him.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like they did. It seems
they
like
they didn't do the GSR test. And they were like, oh, well, the Alabama State Forensics Lab didn't do that test at the time, which, how does an Alabama State Forensics Lab not do GSR tests in 2012?
Yeah.
That's like one of the oldest forensic tests we have. That's like saying they don't do fingerprints.
And a GSR test is very easy.
Yes.
It's just liquid paraffin.
And
you just put liquid paraffin on the hands, around the webbing of the hands, and it will this color.
Yeah, and the checking to see if like there's brain matter and blood.
That just
like,
takes eyeballs.
Yeah. Maybe some magnification? Like, I don't know, but I mean, dear Lord, like, we're not talking about complex DNA analysis here. It's mind-boggling to me that they knew this wasn't just your typical missing persons case. This wasn't some girl who ran off. This wasn't, you know, just anything that you hear about. Like, this is something very different.
Right. And this it also wasn't a typical suicide.
Yes.
Like, they already knew why he committed suicide.
Yeah.
At least on some level.
Right.
He's being investigated as the ringleader of a sex cult, essentially. Come on. You mean to tell me you're not going to take a second look at whether it was a suicide or not?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely insane to me. Chessie also told reporters that she hoped Wendy's trial would bring some answers as to Brittany's whereabouts, because I think what she was thinking, and I get this, and I think a lot of people were hoping this, was that like Wendy was facing very serious charges. And I think that Chessie's hope was that she would try
to plead.
Yeah. She'd try to get a deal and say, hey, if we can work something out, I'll tell you where Brittany is, or I'll tell you what Donnie told me before he died, or whatever, you know, anything.
Right.
And that's what Chessie was really hoping for. And when I was reading articles about Wendy's trial, a lot of them said that. They're like, you know, there's a lot of hope that information about Brittany is going to come out in this. And it just didn't.
Do you think that that was the DA dropping the ball and not offering a plea deal for information?
It could be. I really don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at this point.
Maybe Wendy had a shitty defense attorney, because the defense attorney could also have approached the DA and said, hey, we have information.
Yeah.
If you.
Or it could have been that she was facing so much time that it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. Mm. And so she's just not going to get herself tied up in a murder charge, you know?
Yeah.
Over the next few years, the accused family members were tried and sentenced one by one. By 2015, nearly all had either pleaded guilty or been convicted at trial. So nobody was found not guilty. Nobody went home.
Including Chessie.
Well, yeah. Her case dragged on for like 3 years. She was arrested last. Her case was adjudicated last, so we'll get to that. But before that, we'll talk about everyone else. Randall Scott Wood, Chessie's brother and the one who kicked this whole thing off, chose to cooperate with authorities early on. Randall pleaded guilty to second-degree sodomy and agreed to testify as needed. In February 2015, thanks in part to his cooperation, he was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Interestingly, Chessie claims that the victim also lied about Scott and has said she doesn't believe he ever would have hurt a child.
Why? Why is she continuing to try to cover for this fucked up family?
I don't know. But she addressed that in the documentary. She's like, yeah, I don't think Scott did it. I think he was railroaded, and that the story that this girl told was just revenge for getting her father in trouble and blah, 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 right? Apparently, like, even though there were 11 people arrested for this, there was video evidence of, you know, a good amount of it. Chessie is saying that she and Scott were railroaded. And when she addressed in the documentary, she's like, well, people are like, oh, yeah, you're just saying that because he's your brother. And she's like, well, I'm not saying that about my sisters.
Right.
Like, they did it. They're guilty. But that's her position, that she and Scott were railroaded. Everybody else was guilty. Dustin Kent, Mendy's husband, was considered to be a major figure in the ring. He was charged with multiple counts across two counties, Baldwin and Mobile, including rape, sodomy, incest, and even production of obscene material involving minors. Rather than face trial, Dustin took a plea deal. In 2015, he pleaded guilty to second-degree rape and second-degree sodomy involving victims aged 12 to 16. He was sentenced to 17 years in prison in Baldwin County, and in November 2015, received another 17-year sentence in Mobile County to be served concurrently as recommended by the prosecutor. The assistant DA, Nikki Patterson, explained that Dustin's cooperation was valuable in securing other convictions, including testifying against his own wife, Mendy, and other relatives, saying, quote, "His cooperation enabled us to convict some other people. We might not have been able to convict without his help," end quote. Still, she acknowledged that 17 years was lenient given the crimes, but argued it was better than only nabbing one or two offenders while others walked free. In court, Dustin Kent apologized to the victims and said he hoped they could, quote, "live a normal life," end quote, one day.
Fuck you.
I do find it alarming that the DA said that they might not have been able to get convictions for some of these other people without Dustin snitching, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that does make me concerned about how strong the evidence was in some of these cases.
Well, you said his initial charges were production of media. So he was the one that was filming.
Well, not the one. I think
one of
Donnie was as well, yeah. For sure. So, I don't know. I mean, I really want to believe that all of these cases were solid, but I mean, that statement does not instill me with a lot of confidence.
Right.
Mendy Wood Kent, Wendy's twin and Dustin's wife, eventually stood trial as well. She was convicted of sodomy and sexual abuse of a child under 12, likely based on victim testimony that Mendy participated in the molestation. She was sentenced to 40 years in prison for her role. Derek Wood, Brittany's older brother, and Donald Holland Jr., Brittany's cousin, and Donnie and Wendy's son, were both relatively young. They were 21 and 20, respectively, when they were arrested. And they had both been victims of the abuse in their childhood. The court treated them as youthful offenders, which in Alabama allowed for more leniency and sealed records. Both Derek and Donnie Jr. took plea deals to lesser charges. According to reports, Derek Wood ended up serving 3 years in prison and is now a registered sex offender for life. In the documentary, one of his cousins said that he kept on going back to jail because he refused to register.
Oh, that's frightening.
Yeah. Well, but it was more like, so in the interview that he gave for the documentary, he, you know, was like, yes, I did this, but I was so manipulated by Donnie and Wendy that I just went along with it.
Yeah.
He said he had been given alcohol and money and, you know, plus all the emotional manipulation and, of course, being a victim of many years himself. And then he was saying because he was in prison when he did this interview or jail. And he said that he wanted to get therapy or rehab or do something to help himself. He said, but they weren't allowing him to. He said they just treated me like a monster and locked me up.
Yeah, but why wasn't he registering then?
I think because in his mind, you know, he's a victim and shouldn't have to register. I don't know. Donald Jr.'s outcome was not publicly detailed because of the youthful offender status, but he likely received a similar short sentence. He also had to register on the sex offender registry for life. And in 2021, he was arrested in Florida for a sex offender violation. He was apparently given an ankle monitor, which he cut off and left in the woods. He was apprehended in Gonzales, Texas in 2023. William Billy Brownlee, a family friend, went to trial and was convicted of multiple counts of sodomy and sexual abuse in late 2014. He received 20 years in prison, the maximum allowed by law for his charges. The judge stated that Brownlee, quote, deserved more, end quote, time if it were possible. James Kumba, a family friend, faced charges of sodomy, sex abuse of a child, and rape. Records on Kumba's case are sparse in public sources, but he was among those indicted. It's likely he, too, took a plea deal at some point, but I couldn't find any news articles that talked about his sentence. Nelton Butch Morgan, another family friend, was charged with child sex abuse and rape. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to serve 5 years probation and 10 years in prison under a split sentence. Then came Wendy Holland, who had been charged with the most serious crimes. She refused to plead guilty and went to trial. She was charged with sodomy, sexual abuse, sexual torture, and child endangerment. The evidence against her included testimony from victims. In December 2014, a jury took only 2 hours to convict Wendy on all counts. In January 2015, a judge sentenced her to 219 years in prison with no chance of parole for at least 50 years. The judge told her he wished he could give her more time, calling Wendy's actions depraved, disgusting, and sickening. Wendy Holland is now in her mid-40s and continues to maintain her innocence from prison. Chessie Wood's case dragged on while the others were resolved. Finally, in October 2016, she reached an agreement with prosecutors. She pleaded guilty to a single misdemeanor count of reckless endangerment. In doing so, she did not admit to any sexual abuse, but essentially to being aware of a risk to a child and failing to stop it. She received no jail time, only informal probation, meaning she didn't even have to check in with anyone. She just had to stay out of trouble. ADA Patterson explained in 2016 that the child victim and family agreed to the misdemeanor plea to finally close this chapter. Chessie continued to maintain her innocence in the abuse and says that she only took the plea deal to avoid the risk of a trial and to protect her family. She also claims that the fact that they were willing to take a plea on that one misdemeanor charge only further proves her contention that she never harmed a child. And I get what she's saying, right? Because if they thought that she was
actively participating in this.
Yeah, and sexually abused a child, would they really have let her get off with not even formal probation? She was out on bail the whole time, too. Like, she didn't spend a day in prison.
I mean, the only thing.
Or in jail, you know?
The only thing that I can think of from a prosecution side is that they only had witness testimony and no other evidence.
Right. Which that is what it sounds like. Because I don't think there was video or photo evidence in this case at all. And so, yeah, you're right. And from what it sounds like, there weren't any other kids who accused her. So, yeah, it does sound like it was solely based on the testimony of this one child. Now, like I said earlier, Chessie said that the child made this up. And I do believe that this victim is the same one who implicated Scott. And this is why Chessie contends that both she and Scott were kind of railroaded. Sonia, who is the fourth sister,
yes,
who
the
I
other
only
sister, yes.
mentioned briefly.
Yeah, yeah.
She's never been accused of anything related to this. I don't even know if she lived in the area, honestly, but she was interviewed for the documentary. And she said that the victim told her to her face that Chessie never touched her and neither did Scott. Now, that, of course, is coming only from Sonia, the victim who, you know, I believe was an adult by the time the documentary was filmed. Did not want to be interviewed for the documentary.
Well, I mean, that's understandable.
Completely understandable. So, I mean, I'm taking that with a gigantic grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, just because another sister says that this girl lied.
Right.
Like, I'm definitely not taking her word for it. And another reason I'm not taking her word for it, I mean, the main one being I'm always going to believe a victim over, you know, these shitty adults. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm always inclined to believe the child, especially when there's very irrefutable proof that there was a lot of shit going on. Mm. But beyond that, Chessie has also publicly stated, and her defense team even went on the documentary and said this, and said basically that she was arrested because the cops were mad because she was shit-talking them in the press about what a bad job they've been doing in Britney's investigation. So they're saying that Chessie got arrested as revenge, basically, by the cops.
Okay.
Which, like, God damn it, don't make me get on here and defend police officers. Because, like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, this girl made these allegations during a therapy session at the Child Advocacy Center.
Right.
This isn't because Chessie was saying that the investigation into Britney's disappearance was shitty. Like, that's not why this was.
No. And that further explains why she was so inconsistent with all of her statements. She was protecting herself.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. She didn't want to be implicated in this. And that's why she said, oh, she knew nothing about it until months later, whatever. No, she knew. She knew. She was involved at some level, maybe not to the extent that Wendy and Mendy were.
Yeah.
But they all knew.
Yeah, they all knew. By 2016, all 11 people charged received some form of conviction or plea. The family sex abuse ring was fully exposed and dismantled. And yet, Brittany's disappearance remained unsolved. Not one of those convicted individuals ever revealed solid information about what happened to Brittany. Whether out of loyalty, fear, or culpability, they kept quiet. Brittany never got her day in court, and no one has ever been charged in connection with her presumed death. Over the years, there have, of course, been many theories about what happened to Brittany, including stranger abduction and human trafficking.
Okay.
Yeah, but that didn't happen here. Like, we're not going to talk about that. Let's just talk about the more plausible scenarios.
It's one of two scenarios. She was either murdered by Donnie.
Or Wendy.
And or Wendy.
Yeah.
Or she ran.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are the only two plausible solutions to this.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. And perhaps the most plausible is that Brittany went to confront Donnie about the abuse allegations that her cousin made. We don't know. Maybe she threatened him with exposure or just wanted to gather more information. In either case, the confrontation turned violent, and perhaps Donnie, realizing that Brittany might betray the family secret, killed her to silence her. Now, there are different ideas of how this could have occurred. One possibility is that Donnie shot Brittany with her own gun and disposed of her body somewhere between Styx River and Grand Bay, which could explain her phone ping back in Mobile County if Donnie had traveled back to dump her body.
Right.
Of course, a twist on this theory is that Donnie didn't act alone. Given the family-wide complicity, it's conceivable that he called someone, like his wife Wendy, for help in dealing with Brittany. Now, some version of this theory is supported by the evidence. We know that he picked Brittany up the night she was last seen. Her gun was in his car, and her phone battery was removed from her phone and found in his car.
Right.
Then, of course, there's the suspicious suicide. Authorities believe that whether it was out of guilt for what he did to Brittany or fear about the sex abuse investigation, Donnie drove to a back road and took his own life. However, there are still some who believe that someone else killed Donnie, perhaps to keep him quiet. Now, another scenario, which almost no one close to Brittany considers likely, is the second one that you named, that she chose to disappear and start a new life away from her family. Now, I mentioned in part one that I read this theory on Reddit, that Brittany killed Donnie and ran. And before I read the autopsy, I was starting to come around to this a little bit, because Donnie's death seemed fishy, and she had motive.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, I would say that a mother wouldn't leave her child behind like that, but maybe she left in order to protect her daughter. Court records revealed that the child victims in her family had been as young as three when the abuse started. Brittany could have thought that her leaving would stop her family from having access to her daughter and would potentially protect her from future abuse.
I'm assuming that Peyton, after Brittany's disappearance, went with her father's family?
Yeah, she stayed with her paternal grandparents, with Brittany's father and stepmother helping out. And those are all relatives who've never been accused of anything. And this story is so fucking awful that I would love to believe that that's what happened. That Brittany got her revenge and saved her daughter. Unfortunately, it just doesn't seem likely at this point. It's been nearly 14 years with no sightings of her, even after everybody went to jail, you know?
Yeah.
It seems much more likely that Brittany is dead. In 2020, Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Mack plainly stated that authorities believe Brittany Wood is deceased and her body has been concealed, saying, quote, "Closure will only come when Miss Wood's killer or killers are indicted and Miss Wood's body is located," end quote. Today, with many of her relatives still in prison, Brittany Wood's case remains open and unsolved. Despite the passage of time, Brittany's father and stepmother, the Hankies, have kept Brittany's story alive and have continued to push for resolution. Even Chessie continued to hold vigils and speak to the press, asking for answers. A glimmer of hope and then disappointment came in July 2020. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released an age-progressed image showing what Brittany might look like at age 27. The updated image spurred new interest and tips. Acting on one such tip, Mobile County Sheriff's Office conducted an extensive search and excavation in Grand Bay, the area where Brittany's phone had last pinged. Cadaver dogs indicated a possible scent of human remains on a rural property, and investigators brought in heavy equipment to dig for evidence. But in the end, nothing of significance was found. In May 2022, 10 years after Brittany disappeared, the family garnered support from local businesses and put up a billboard on a busy road in Mobile, reminding the public that Brittany was still missing. The large billboard with Brittany's photo and contact information for tips stands as a literal sign that the case is not forgotten. In 2025, Chessie told reporters that she was still looking for her daughter. When asked what she would say to families in a similar situation, she said, quote, "I just want to tell families, I don't care if it's 5 months or 20 years, never give up on your loved one. I always keep looking for them. They deserve it." End quote. Chessie passed away of cancer a few months later in October 2025. So I've said several times in both parts of this episode that I truly don't believe that Chessie was involved in her daughter's disappearance. Like, but I mean, I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I don't think she was involved in the disappearance. I do think that she was involved at some level or knew more than she's letting on about the sexual abuse.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to what I was saying when she did that HLN interview, just a week and a half after Brittany went missing, you know, I think that that was a detriment to her case, that she could have gotten a lot more coverage into Brittany's disappearance if she would have been upfront. You know, not obviously, you know, not about her part in it, if she did have a part, but about saying what was going on with Donnie. It could have spurred bigger searches earlier.
Yeah.
And they could have found something. But unfortunately, we'll just never know.
It also sounds like there might potentially be more offenders out there. Because Derek even said that there were times when these random women would come over and, you know, abuse him.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
there's
you're right.
More than just the 11 people that were arrested.
That's what it sounds like, because you're right. If that's true, and the only female in his family he was abused by was Wendy, the only non-family member who was arrested in all this was Jennifer Moore.
Right.
And that's just one.
Right.
So if he's saying women, plural, then you're absolutely right. There are more people out there. And they're saying that there were as many as 30 victims in this. One thing that everyone agrees on is that Brittany did not deserve whatever fate befell her. By all accounts, she was a young woman trying to do the right thing in a terribly wrong situation. She loved her little girl, she cared about her cousins, and if she indeed tried to shine a light on evil, then Brittany is a heroine as much as a victim. Brittany Wood has been missing from Mobile, Alabama since May 30th, 2012. She is a white female with blonde to brown hair and blue eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 5'3" and 105 pounds. She has a tattoo of the name Peyton surrounded by butterflies on her left leg. Her lip is pierced. She was last seen wearing a blue t-shirt, blue denim shorts, and flip-flops. She was carrying a pink or teal tote bag containing extra clothing, a red curling iron, a makeup bag, and a cell phone. Brittany was 19 when she went missing. She would be 33 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Brittany Wood, please contact the Mobile Police Department at 251-208-2000. 1700, or you can submit an anonymous tip. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!